Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Okay, I'm joined now by psychotherapist Richard Hogan. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, Brendan.
And Richard, we're talking about Black Friday and of course Cyber Monday there, and with Christmas coming as well. A lot of pressure on parents now this time of year to buy smartphones and tablets for their kids. And I think before we started our chats here, you had written a book called Parenting the Screenager. Yeah. So we've touched on phones in different ways in our chats. We've never had the actual phone conversation. Can I ask you first, have phones come into your house?
They have indeed, Brendan. They have indeed.
So heal or heal thyself,
Exactly. And so I've lived it. And that's why all of my theory around this and everything I write about is the lived experience of being a parent. And that's, I'm very practical about this stuff. And parents have to live in the real world. And my daughter asked me in fifth class, can I have a smartphone? Everybody has a smartphone. I said, no, unfortunately, you cannot have a smartphone. And she was upset. And I said, I get it. That's, you know, if everyone has a smartphone. And funnily enough, the week later, she came up to me, she said, a girl in on the yard said to her, it's your dad's fault, I don't have a smartphone. And I said, well, at least you're not alone now. Right? But yeah, so it's earlier and earlier with kids getting smartphones. She got her smartphone for her confirmation. But here's the really important part, Brendan, before, because I work with this so much, right? Yeah. Before you give your child a smartphone, outline a really strong family policy around the smartphone that both parents are aligned in and that you follow up on. And that, because it's very hard, you can do it, but it's harder to roll back later on. And so when I gave it to my daughter, I said to her, I will be checking this. You won't be taking it to your bedroom at night. It won't be the last thing you see, and it won't be the first thing that you see. And okay. I will from time to time check it. And so 3 weeks later, I said, give me the phone. And I checked it. And now she's in first year. Not delighted when I say hand over the phone, but she does it, right? Because I brought that culture in very early. And that's a key
tip. Okay, so you
tip.
Set the ground you rules set the before ground there's any phone.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So the rules you have in your house, the bedroom, the spot checking, anything else?
If you're going to download an app, I have to know about it first.
Yeah. Right. And look, with Apple, certainly, you can link the child absolutely. Into your own
and
things.
And we turn off our apps.
So that you have to actually say yes to every app.
Exactly.
So you bought your daughter that before secondary school,
which
would not be really recommended by the experts, Richard. I mean, the experts don't live in the real world, Brendan.
Of course, ideally, I would have liked to hold off till secondary school. And I always say you have to look at the child that you're working with there.
Okay.
And if the child had shown me that they were low impulse control and all that kind of stuff, and they had low sense of self about themselves, if I thought they didn't have good self-regulation, you know, and if they had poor impulse control, I wouldn't have given the phone. But thankfully, the child in question is dare I say it, quite mature for her age.
And okay. So, and it's not all bad. I presume good reasons to give a child a phone,
Connects her to her, you know, absolutely. They're connected to the devices. And that's the key thing, that we're not here to sensationalise it or scare the life out of parents, because it's the modern lived way of communication now. And so it's just about parenting it. There are serious problems with this thing. There is no doubt about it. But it is how they communicate now. There's no doubt about that. And so I'd often have parents say to me, my child's in second year and they don't have a smartphone. Am I being too strict? And I'd say, you're being way too strict. You know, so your child is outside the normal social group now. And so then you're going to force them as a little bit of a commentary, a social commentary around the fact that they don't have a device. And so we have to, as parents, live in the real world. We don't want to isolate our kids. And we don't want them to kind
you
of
want
stand
to be
out.
That hickey kid
exactly.
Who doesn't have the
kid
yeah.
who's like, you know, doesn't get technology. I think we have to live in the real world, and that's how they communicate. And so, and technology is really important for kids with dyslexia. For myself, I would never have written a book. Growing up, I would never have written books. If I had to write with a pen, I'd be dead in the water. And so technology has been great for us in loads of ways, and we're living longer. We're cutting out lots of the tools that the Grim Reaper has. We know more about our universe. All of this stuff is really important. But there's serious problems that parents really need to be aware of.
Okay. You make an interesting point that, and it's kind of obvious in a way, once you buy them the phone, there's no going back. Everything changes.
Everything changes.
They're gone in some way.
They're gone. It's hard to watch it. I watched it with my own daughter. It's hard to watch it. They're gone into that device. There's no doubt about it.
Away from the family a bit.
Yeah. When you think
and
about it.
That's okay, yeah.
It's hard for parents. I think adolescence is very hard for parents. And I sit with this a lot in my clinic. And it's something that I used to say before I ever had a teenager. And now that I have it, I was like, weren't you a smug little fella saying this? I'd always say adolescence is about being together differently. That's what I used to always say for years.
Okay.
And as parents, we have to come to come to terms with that difference. They're not going to rely on us like the pillars, the colossal pillars that we were when they were 5, 6, 7 or 8. We're not that important to them at this point. They rely more on their peers. That's normal. That's a normative part of maturation and development and finding of self, right? But we're always there. We are the pillars still. We're always around them. And it's about giving them their agency and autonomy. But what I'd always say, it's about a held autonomy. They're too young to be given full autonomy. And okay. So parents would often say, should I check the phone? I would say, absolutely. And they'd say to me, is that an invasion of their privacy?
Yeah.
And I would say, it is not an invasion of their privacy. It's your parental agency being exerted because you're not their best friend. You can't give an adolescent absolute agency here, right? You have to monitor what they're doing. You have to give them, you know, little pillars so that they can navigate the world, the boundaries around the technology. That's one of the four, that's one of the really important ones. We will time from time to time check the phone. 33% less likely to get involved in risky behavior if you know your parents are observing your behavior.
Okay. Do you have controls on the phone? Is the parental controls built in and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Turn off the apps at a certain hour. I know I can trace where she is and all that kind of stuff when she's down the village and all that. I know where she is, right? Yeah. And all of that is brilliant.
Okay, so we have to educate ourselves as well about all that and figure out how to...
I think, Brendan, that's a really good point because I think parents can feel really outside or outpaced by technology or age. Us dinosaurs, right? We didn't grow up in it. And so we can feel really outpaced by this thing. But again, it's a very quick... little bit of research there and you get some really nice insights into what you can do as a parent. I'm not really tech savvy at all, but I'm around it all the time and I'm talking about it and I'm talking with experts all the time, so it gives me great insights. But as a normal parent out there, you can just do a little bit of research there online to know what you can bring into the device as a parent.
Okay, so you can teach it to turn off the apps at a particular point.
Exactly.
And then can you control for anything
what apps they
unsuitable
use? You can look at what apps they use. Here's the problem with the apps. If these companies wanted to talk to your child or my child, they'd have to come through us in the 80s or 90s, right?
Right.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
If they wanted to sell something to our children, they'd have to come through us. And so they'd sell it in a parent-friendly way. Now they don't need us. They go right around us.
Whispering right into their ears.
And giving them what they want, not what they need. Yeah. Snapchat. Think about Snapchat. All your messages disappear. You know, you can do all this kind of stuff and behavior and your parents can't catch it because your messages disappear. No wonder Snapchat is such a huge platform.
Yeah.
And so problematic.
Okay.
Because they've designed it for what kids want.
Okay. So in terms of the ones, like you have to give them some. Snapchat does seem to be the bloodstream of communication
TikTok is
a lot.
Just a gigantic thing.
TikTok and Instagram, like, okay, are they harming mental health, do you think?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
I really do. The Surgeon General in America came out there at the start of the summer to say that they are. They carried out a study into it and said that, and even Meta themselves carried out a study and said that girls are about 16% more likely to be, you know, have suicidal ideation from consuming their social media and 17% higher or 18% higher of eating disorders. There's no doubt about it because, and these platforms have been caught feeding very, I mean, there's loads of whistleblowers who've been telling us what's going on inside these places. They're feeding negative content to our children because they know that negativity really sells. What they're after is clicks. And so they're trying to give your child material that they might share or that might be actually interesting to them. And so there's lots of negative stuff there around eating. I mean, it's a huge problem that I sit with teenage girls around eating, body image, body dysmorphia. And I think for boys, a huge issue for boys currently is getting caught, you know, blackmailed through their social media.
Yeah.
Right? That's a huge issue that about 85% of people who are getting blackmailed on social media is boys.
So
right?
How does this tend, if we're watching out for this, how does that tend to present? Is this a stranger, nominally attractive young girl, boy?
Can I give you an exact case study?
Do,
right?
Please,
because it's really important. And boys are less likely to talk to you, Brendan. So that's the problem there, right? Yeah. And so this is an aggregate of all the cases I've worked with here.
Okay.
Right? A boy's online, social media, girl sends him a message to connect, good looking girl, right? Imagine if I'm 14, 15 years of age, I'd be delighted. Good looking girl sent me a friendship request. I connect with her, chatting away for a little bit, all innocuous stuff, telling me she likes my social media, and but you seem like really sporty and you're a handsome looking fellow, whatever, and you're kind of chatting away. And then she sends me a picture of her chest and asks for something in return. That has happened to so many boys in this country and across the globe. And then the boy sends, of course, excited, like you, like any normal, you know, any teenage boy, excited. The girl sends you a picture of her chest. He sends back what she's asked for. And now he's trapped because she now reveals herself of who she truly is, which is more than likely a man, right? And so it says to the boy, I'm going to disseminate this to your parents. I'm going to send it around to this, and this if you don't start sending me money. We have so many cases of that. And teenage boys are less likely to come downstairs and say, Mom, Dad, you know, I did something really silly here. I sent an image of my body, you know, and to this who I believe to be a girl, but actually they're blackmailing me. And so that's why first of all, when you give that technology to your child, I say this to my daughter a lot, when you consume something or something happens, come to us. That's what I say to her. I always said to her, we will not judge you. There'll be no judgment. Okay. We look at the behavior, right? But we won't judge you. And I said to her, this is vitally important. We won't take your phone off you. Because I think teenagers are terrified. It's their lifeline that you're going to turn around and going to go, give me that phone, that's gone. And that would be the worst response, because then they become more deceptive and they become more secretive, and that's not what you want with your child.
Okay, yeah, it is the knee-jerk threat to make, isn't it?
Take it away,
Go back to Instagram and TikTok for a second then. It's very hard to tell a teenager they can't have Instagram and TikTok, though. So what's the answer there?
Well, they're going to be on it.
Yeah.
They're going to be on it. There's no doubt about that. Okay. They're going to be on it.
So you don't say you can't have them?
At a particular age, I would be kind of trying to hold off with those things till after 13. You know, 14 is kind of the age. 13, 14 is where you're going to go those. Yeah, but no, you can't. You can't block it. Well, you can, but you push your child outside then their network, their social network, and that's not advisable. And so it's about really having a good conversation about what those platforms are, what's going to happen on there. Right. And what, you know, how to protect yourself against it, and understanding that there's people out there that are decent and good, but also people that aren't so decent and good. And I'd always say to my daughter, don't you accept any friendship from anybody that you don't know, even if they're connected to your friend, but you don't know them. You do not accept a friendship request from that person.
Do you feel she's actually listening?
Yeah, I do. Honestly, yeah, okay, yeah, no, yeah. I do.
They do hear it.
I think
you know what I mean. Like, I do. Sometimes it just feels like they're going, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's that too, right? But not this.
Yeah.
But just go away, Dad. But I talk in schools all the time, and I sit in the National Advisory Council, so I'm hearing from principals and parents all over Ireland all the time, Brendan.
Yeah.
And I hear what's going on, you know, and we just have to, as parents, not be pushed outside it, get our agency back, get our hands around it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And bring in some nice, sensible policies.
Okay. Bullying obviously has been supercharged by the phones, hasn't it?
Oh, no doubt about it. Bullying has always been a scourge, Brendan. You know, we've talked about it here. We did a piece on it there. Bullying has always been a scourge, and it's a ubiquitous experience throughout our schools in Ireland. There's no doubt about it. And cyberbullying has made respite from bullying almost non-existent. That's the huge problem, that the tormentor is in your pocket now. The tormentor is up in your bedroom. Because when I was in school, if someone was tormenting you, at least when you went home, unless the bully is at home, you know, if you went home, at least you'd have rest in your bedroom. You could turn on your music. But now with smartphones and all that, you're just constantly targeted and at the hands of that tormentor. And then this exclusion stuff, which is so insidious and so subtle. You know, pictures of girls down in Starbucks or the lads playing whatever it is, and you're not invited. That stuff is brutal for a child.
And is that all kind of, it's a deliberate kind of
thing? It can be very deliberate.
Okay.
Yeah. And girls can do that more deliberately than boys, to be honest, in my experience. Yeah. It can be, and it's very difficult for principals to work with it, because what can you say? Sandra, stop sending pictures of yourself and the girls down in Starbucks. It's a difficult thing to work with, for sure. What I'd always say to children when they're adolescents as they're moving into, say, secondary school, I'd warn them about what's going to happen and what can happen and how you can get isolated and how you can get excluded. But I would keep my friendship network as big as possible. It's so important, Brendan. I can't stress that tip enough, because, you know, friendships are going to be ruptured. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be, fluctuating all the way through from about 12 to 17. They really fluctuate, and a more friend becomes more prominent. One disappears, one lets you down, one says something negative about you. But the wider your friendship group is, the more you're kind of bulletproof, because you can move from friendship group to friendship group.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You're not actually relying on one person. And if that one person rejects you or says something negative about you, it's all consuming. It envelops your entire social life. And that is devastating for a child.
And if we're in our constant breaches of human rights checkings on the phone, if the parent discovers that there is bullying going on that they've not been told about, what can the parent do in that situation?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. But you see, because parents always ask me, should I check the phone? And the amount of parents I've sat with, because I just want to answer that in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
The amount of parents who I've sat with really debating that, like you said there, you know, joking about the human rights and all that. You have to check your child's online activity. And if it is revealed, I would be trying to figure out, how can I bring this up to your child? because it's going to be hard to say that you check the phone, let's say, if you're doing it surreptitiously.
Okay.
But if you have that boundary in place to begin with, when you check the phone, you find, what's that about? What are they saying there about you? What's that? Now you're okay to say that. It's more difficult when you're pretending you're not checking the phone, when okay. you don't have that rule in place. But again, I would say if I've worked in some really terrible cases where they found things out, I think you need to sit down with the child and have a conversation. Say, look, this is what we've seen. Okay. We know this is happening to you, and you know, we're here to hear what's happening. No judgment. We're not taking your device. We're here to support you.
Okay, so the first conversation in the bullying situation is with the child, and then
take it from there.
Okay, so then look, the big one then for boys is the access to porn, which you are very
Absolutely. I'm such an advocate against action against this, Brendan. I work with the brilliant people in Ruam and Women's Aid, you know, and CyberSafe Kids. It's one of the biggest ills I can see in our society currently. Because
you're not an old-fashioned prude.
No, you live
in the real world, and actually think this is the big evil?
It is the big evil. It's taboo. No one's talking about it, and I feel like I'm out in the field on my own, screaming around and like some sort of prudish kind of guy here. But I'm absolutely not. I grew up in Cork in the 80s and 90s. Channel 18. I don't know if you ever had Channel 18 down Cork.
the German channel at night.
Yeah. I mean, that was great learning for a kid growing up in the 90s. But that's not what's happening now. That's not what pornography is now. If you do any research into it, it's hardcore, extreme material. And any conversation around this is embedded in the wider socio-cultural context that porn propagates negative ideas about women wanting to have consent taken from them. Porn today is about choking and spitting and restraint and domination and beating women. I mean, that's not anything we want our young boys to have in their heads as they're satiating their normal, because it's normal, sexual interest. That's not what we want their kids to satiate their sexual interest with. We want them to have a healthy interest in their sexuality. And intimacy is such a risk. This is why I kind of get emotional about it, Brendan, because I sit with couples. It's the big problem that's facing our society, I think. I sit with couples where, you know, their marriage is completely collapsed. I grew up in a family where addiction was present, right? So I know what addiction is like. This is an addiction. This is absolutely an addiction.
So in terms of the kids, in terms of what we can do, if you're giving a boy your phone, you giving the boy his phone, are you telling them about porn at that point, or is that kind of putting it on the agenda?
I hate saying this statement, right? It's not that, it's not if your child will consume pornography. It's that they will consume pornography, right? It's whether they want to or not.
Yeah, because nobody likes to think their kids are.
Yes, and I've worked with so many parents who are ashamed of what their child was looking at. And I'm trying to say to them, it would be unusual for them not to have consumed pornography at this point.
Okay, so how can we prepare them for that?
It's embedded. This is what gets me so angry. I work in schools, and a principal told me recently that a senior infant had consumed hardcore extreme material. I work with a family where the child was drawing in class sexual images. I've worked with families where the child was saying sexual things to the mom. I've worked with families where the family fell apart because of, you know, pornographic use and all that. And so we do need legislation, and I'm setting up a petition at the moment, right? And it's on my Instagram, and I'd ask your listeners to go onto it, Official Richard Hogan, and sign it. I'm going to try to bring it to government to show, look, this is what the country wants. This is what parents and and adults want to protect their children, because currently there's nothing there, Brendan.
And are you the only one?
I haven't heard anybody else, you know, looking at this. And I find I'm on my own a little bit. I've been writing about it for a long time.
Yeah.
And we really need action. And I'm going to bring this petition to the government to say, look, it's not okay to say that six-year-olds can consume hardcore extreme material. Because I know, and clinically we know, that if there's a seed of vulnerability, of course not every child who consumes pornography will have developed negative ideas, but if there's a seed of vulnerability there, Benron, it can be the fuel that drives pathological sexual desire towards women and promotes ideas around misogyny. None of us want that, I don't think, for our children growing up.
Okay, and we just have to assume that all boys are.
They were
going.
Yes, absolutely. They're going.
Whether they go looking or not.
Whether they go looking or not, it's embedded into all aspects of technology and platforms. There's no doubt about it.
Texts are wondering, at what age is it still acceptable to check the child's phone? Here we go, you see. Can I still check? Can I still check at 17, 18?
He's 25 and turning up.
Saying yes.
Yeah, I would up till about 17.
Okay.
16, 17 would be kind of where they're coming into adulthood and they're kind of developing, and you're letting them off then.
Okay.
To be honest.
Yeah. Maybe a point comes where you don't want it for yourself.
you don't want to see what they're doing.
Yeah. Maybe you should go, sir. Maybe you should like stop officially checking at a certain point, go surreptitious for a year or two, and then for everyone's sake,
just let it go.
Yeah. Person here saying, I think all smartphones should be banned in schools, smart devices for people with learning disabilities accepted across the board, so that there's no judgment of who does not have a phone in school. We all grew up in school with no phones. We're all perfectly safe and able. Banning phones in schools is the first step that needs to be taken. Yeah. And a lot of people will agree with it, to be honest.
I agree with it. I think it's that would be a great first step, because teenagers need help with this. They really do, you know, and they actually enjoy when they have been forced off it, you know, because then they can say, well, it's not me giving it up, the school rule or the whatever it is. Or
really?
They
often welcome it, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Because I'm talking with them every day and I ask them about it. And concentration is massively impacted. Grey matter is massively impacted on the brain for the constant flux, the constantly going into, the constantly disruption to your kind of thinking. I mean, we know through adolescence that's such vital time in your development that it can cause disruptions in neurological development. And so you get sleeping problems, you can get depressive, become more depressive in your thinking, and suicidal ideation because of, you know, extreme consumption of your technology. That research is done, we know that.
Okay.
And so we need protection.
We've been fairly balanced about it up to now, but then it strikes me that what you were saying is that we need to actually start forcing limits on this for their own good. Like,
absolutely.
Is this making them unhappy? Like, is this part of what's making them so unhappy?
The White House came out recently with a paper called the Unprecedented Youth Mental Health Crisis. The Surgeon General has come out and said it. I'm working in it every day. Any of my colleagues would say, teachers listening to this working in schools know exactly what we're talking about. There is an unprecedented mental health issue currently amongst this cohort of children and adolescents. Why? These things feed some very negative ideas about self. They constantly make you look at a superficial self. And we know through neuroscience that thoughts about self are statistically indistinguishable from negative emotions. So the more you think about self and the more you compare yourself, comparison is the thief of joy, right? The more you compare yourself to this fake, false, filtered image of beauty and all this kind of stuff, the more you're always going to come to a deficit about yourself. They need protection. They need help. We need to educate them around that stuff, around comparison and about your image and about your body and all that. But, you know, anorexia, all of these things have been fed through TikTok. There's no doubt about it. I've worked with so many children who've talked to me about that's where they first got their ideas, from the suggestibility that came to their Instagram algorithm, what has been fed to them. So they do need protection. That's the reality we have. It's here to stay. It's going to get more sophisticated. But as parents and as legislators and educators and policymakers, we have to protect them. And I would say to parents, you have to embed into their everyday life moments where they don't go on their phone. In my house, technology-free zones, bedroom and dinner. Dinner is a sacrosanct event where we all sit down and chat about the day. No technology, no exemptions to that.
So parents need to be conscious of their own thing too. Just really briefly, before you go, Richard, it's a texter here says, I strongly suspect my 10-year-old son saw something on his older cousin's phone 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't been the same child since, but I cannot get him to talk about it.
That is the huge issue that's going on in so many families. Absolutely. The older cousin, the older friend visits and shows them some pornographic, hardcore, extreme material, and it disturbs. This is why I'm so passionate about this. It disrupts it. Well, yeah, innocence over. And then they're looking at their mother in a different way, and they're thinking about intimacy in themselves and their body in a different way. We have to wake up.
Okay.
And please, I'm asking people to sign the petition so I can bring it to government.
So this texter's first step is they need to try and get that child to talk.
Exactly. And actually talk about your own experience and what you've seen over the years and how, you know, and so just open up that conversation, because they're going to feel, the reason they're closed down, they feel, first of all, there's a shame around what they saw, and they believe that you might judge them for what they saw, and it's like remove that stigma around it.
Okay. That's a kind of a depressing, upsetting conversation.
Sorry,
one level, but you've given people lots of tips and rules and everything else there. So I suppose we just have to work a bit harder on it. Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, thank you very much. We take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.